Right now, I'd like to introduce you to Laura Mullen. Laura Mullen is the author of 7 books. Her most recent is just out from Otis Books, Enduring Freedom, a little book of mechanical brides. Her poetry has won a number of recognitions, including Ironwood Stanford Prize, 2 Board of Regents Atlas Grants, an NEA Fellowship, and a Rona Jaffe Award, among many other honors. She's had several McDowell Fellowships and is a frequent visitor to the summer writing program at the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa. Her work has been widely anthologized and is included in American Hybrid from Norton and I'll Drown My Book, Conceptual Writing by Women. I'm very pleased to have this McElveen professor in English at LSU here joining me this afternoon. She's also a special interest delegate in creative writing for the Modern Language Association and contributing editor for the online poetry site The Volta. Laura Mullen, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hello, Dr. Andy. Thank you for having me aboard.
Absolutely. I'm glad that this time worked out for you. Happy Thanksgiving season to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you also. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, it's exciting that you and Catherine Walsh are coming to read, I believe it's a week from tonight at University of California at Davis.
It is a week from tonight. We're looking forward to it. Or I should just speak for myself. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll find out soon if that's true of Catherine Walsh as well. But tell me some more about you and your work outside of some of the awards and book titles that I just mentioned. For instance, I know that you teach down at Louisiana, but I don't think I hear a Louisiana accent.
No, I'm a native Californian. I was born in Los Angeles. I've been at Louisiana since 2004, and we've got an amazing MFA program there. Very small, lots of funding, great students, fabulous colleagues, and amazing productivity on the level of the on the students' part.
That's
really
great.
Extraordinary. Very, very happy about it.
You were there at the time of Hurricane Katrina, and I'm wondering if that was a constant topic of poems in the years after that cataclysmic event.
I gather that on some level you're not asking just me whether I wrote poems.
Right, but,
but
your students
poems.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, I think that is actually is a fascinating question. Okay, here's what happened. Some people who were there maybe are slowly coming to write about what happened, in part because you have no idea how being part of an event like that just knocks your writing sideways, changes whatever your poetics were. It was a lot easier for people to come in from outside with their poetics intact and their lives intact and their world intact and come in, write some poems about it, and get out again. And we saw a lot of that. I think that the real poems about Katrina from the natives are still in process. And there's a large part, I would say, of people, like, for a while, just like, I don't want to think about it.
Right.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm drywalling, thank you very much. You know, I'm not writing poems.
Yeah.
And it's really important to kind of balance out those two impulses. And that really took me, with the book before the current book, into a space of thinking about the stuff that Wordsworth says about who gets to write about what happens. And he really goes back and forth in the prelude to the lyrical ballad. He goes back and forth with, like, who has the rights? Is it the person it happened to who really had, in fact, the experience? Or is it the person who practices writing all the time, and so they're really good at writing, and so they're good at moving the experience into the medium or word into the world, into the word? And he goes back and forth in a way that shows he can't actually come down on one side or the other.
Right.
That's where we are.
It's interesting because if we were to think about that in a Wordsworthian way, another question is, who in the middle of all that is best qualified to represent poems in the language really used by men and women? And also, who has the time to reflect on all the emotions that are welling up, rather than, say, putting up drywall. And
also, I would say, in the midst of a culture that is increasingly prone to creative rhetoric, who might not think that it would be better just to, for instance, look at the really bizarre language being used? Let's start with Katrina hurricane. If the hurricane wasn't the problem, the failure of the levees was the problem.
Right.
And people in New Orleans call it the federal flood. They don't call it Katrina at all. They'll bite your head off for that.
Oh, that's interesting. So there are fingers to be pointed, but not at acts of God. For other people,
no.
were able to weather that storm, but to the problem with the levees.
Yeah, and when you need to sort out what really happened, is poetry your best friend at that moment? Yes, no. I think as language workers, we can do a lot to point to the gaps between reality and language, and point to the ways that creativity has become a prerogative of the acknowledged legislators.
Right, right. That's great. Laura Mullen is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And she'll be reading a week from this evening at 126 Voorhees on the UC Davis campus with Catherine Walsh. And I've caught her on the live line the day before Thanksgiving here on KDVS. So, Laura, tell me more about your poetry and your own relationship with schools and trends and debates that go on in creative writing programs across the country.
What an interesting question. I think I'll start by just talking about the book I'm going to be reading from.
Please.
Since it's just out. Enduring Freedom is the name of the book, and you'll catch right away the sort of reference to, the direct reference to the Iraq conflict, occupation, again, the question of language comes up for us here, I think. And what happened is that I'd begun to notice that we were at war for a long, long time and really paying no attention to it at all. It's not on television. It's not that much in the newspapers. I was teaching creative writing for the whole period of the conflict, and I can count the poems about the war on the fingers of probably one hand. And this isn't because there was a disconnect. My students in Louisiana, if they're not themselves headed off for some kind of military career, they have friends and loved ones who are. It's a very poor state. And when you don't have a draft, what happens in a very poor state is that a lot of people sign up to be in the military. And I began to think about, what we don't want to look at. I think maybe that's a larger preoccupation for me. It's over the course of all my work that's there. And then I began to think about what we do want to work on, what we do want to look at. And I think this was, I should say I probably tilted into this, if I can backtrack for a moment.
Sure.
I have a trilogy project going on that is a trilogy of texts that are cross-genre. And I'm basing them on the low genres, the things that we are taught mostly not to look at or think about too seriously in grad school. So the first one was a gothic, the second one was a murder mystery, and I got at work on the romance. And I got myself into this state of looking at bride stuff, bridal magazines, wedding advice, blah, 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 blah. And I just, the contrast between what we don't want to look at, which is supposedly the more noble subject of literature, which is war, and what we do want to look at, which is intensive party planning for weddings, which is supposedly something that's not very important at all. And I decided to kind of flip it. So I would take the thing we don't want to look at and put it on that wide white screen provided by the dress, the wedding dress.
Right.
And so Enduring Freedom is the subtitle is Enduring Freedom, A Little Book of Mechanical Brides. And it's really a book of very serious and sympathetic wedding advice on some levels, except that it's kind of like it was done by Italo Calvino. And he was collaborating with Martha Stewart. And you have to sort of frame it like that. I think one of the publishers put it well. He said that the book reminded him of what Frida, what Andre Breton had said of Frida Kahlo, that she was a bomb with a ribbon around it. And that really is this kind of bringing together of subjects that seem disparate, but in fact turn out to have a lot to say to each other, is really what the book is about.
I try to do something similar, or analogous, I should say, on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, trying to bring together poetry and technology every week.
I just loved when I saw the title of your show. I was just so ecstatic. Yeah. Good. Excellent. For you. Absolutely.
And there's something of that in a little book of mechanical brides, mechanical yes. being technological and brides being a poetic topic, certainly.
Yeah, I don't think we have at all begun to wrap our minds around the ways that our being in the world is changed by the technology we're handling. We are being transformed as human beings. From the inside out in ways that we don't even really have the ethical skills to begin to talk about, much less really, really come to an understanding of.
Yeah, I think that's well put. I'd say, too, that at times that transformation is incremental because it happens to us every day with how we spend our time. And
yes.
we could compare that to the sought-out, hopefully sought-out transformations that poetry can present, whereas we know if a poem really touches us, that it does transform something about our worldview or our perspective on an emotional truth or whatever the case may be.
I think that's true. And I think that, I mean, I love, it's Joshua Clover who says wonderfully, poetry was the first memory chip. So bringing the two together makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Laura, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a public service announcement. And then when I return, I'm hoping that you will share with us one of your poems from your new book.
I'd be happy to.
Excellent. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I'm pleased that you joined me today on your campus and community radio station. Laura Mullen is my first guest, and she's the author of a number of books of poetry. Her most recent, Enduring Freedom, a little book of mechanical brides. That's out from Otis Books, Seismicity Editions. And she'll be reading from that book, and I'm sure others, this coming Wednesday evening, a week from tonight, the 28th of November, at 126 Voorhees on the UC Davis campus. So, Laura, what's the poem that you've chosen to share with listeners this afternoon?
All right, I'm picking up one of the prose poems pretty late in the book called Bride of the New Dawn. I want to say that the book is mostly prose poems, and that's deliberate. I like what prose does to the sense of slipperiness, of the difficulty of finding your way in a text when it's prose. Bride of the New Dawn. New Dawn was, of course, a phrase evoked often during especially the early stages of our engagement in Iraq. There's a lot in the book that has to do with sort of new dawns, new starts, born again, all of which is a kind of nice slipperiness between our then president's situation as a born-again Christian and the conflict and the wedding.
Great.
Bride of the New Dawn. She appears to be recognized as herself and not herself, new because endlessly recycled, not what she was but not what she will be, see? Not married and not married, the processional, the ritual meant to extend a magical present until the head of this pin is the size of a rented hall and all of us angels stepping out on the long, blind train of her ongoing gown. To go in single and come married out is easy enough. What matters is to enlarge the interstitial, to live as long as we can in the not exactly no longer and the not quite not yet also. Where organ music drowns the ill-digested vows and the empty stomach growls. Hesitant. The BND goes down slow as a pill we can't really swallow, stuck chunk in a stalled gulp between yesterday and tomorrow, at one and the same time belated and punctual. it's the system itself we've come to see. Open the plug of that rubber-edged rose window. Not me and not you, but we, the marriage of church and state, made visible, audible, available. Here, dearly beloved, an embarrassing gurgle, and the costly gown, so much densely crumpled bathroom tissue, backing up one overworked way in and out of the usual world. From the mouth to point south, scrawl that in soap on the vehicle. From will you to why don't you ever on the march to irreconcilable. Hey, whoa, away with you hand-wringing naysayers. Be here now, 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 now. Cheeks are flushed and eyes overflow as we grasp her new handle. Here to hear the I do with a couple of hard blows. That flesh-blunted sound of bone on bone, dislodging as cough a caught morsel not thoroughly chewed. Back out. Back up. Quagmire. Circle. Proposed solutions involve the usual budget expansions, extended tours of duty, and additional trips.
That was great. Tell us again the title, Laura.
Bride of the New Dawn.
Bride of the New Dawn. This is one of the many poems that you can hear and read in Enduring Freedom, a little book of mechanical brides. The website of my guest, Laura Mullen, is lauramullen.biz. And Laura, what's the best way for people to pick up a book? Through your website or bookstore?
PD, Small Press Distribution. Love them.
Excellent. Good. Well, we will check that out and check out your website as well. I'm so glad that this worked out for you to appear with me this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a great pleasure.
See you next week here in Davis.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.